It's Friday, April 12, and hey, there are quite a few weather warnings and watches in place around the country, all ending at various times throughout the day. So make sure you keep an eye on updates as the day goes on. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is what's worth talking about. The new doco that'll leave you shocked about the so-called forever chemicals that are in dozens of products. What are the chance boot camps could work this time round for young offenders? The Blues women take on the Chiefs Manawa tomorrow night. Will come out on top, and the thing Gen Z and millennials in the US say is their biggest splurge. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
A new documentary is throwing long-lasting and sometimes deadly pollutants back in the spotlight. The Stan original documentary, How to Poison a Planet, which premieres across the ditch later this month, investigates the rise and widespread use of PFAS, or so-called forever chemicals, and the ongoing environmental and health impacts they cause, focusing on the US and a small town in Australia. The toxic contaminant is used in dozens of things, from household products to clothing to contact lenses to lipstick, and most commonly is associated with firefighting foam. Earlier this year, the Environmental Protection Agency here announced it was banning the use of PFAS in cosmetics in New Zealand from the end of 2026, and there is a nationwide ban here as well on firefighters training with the foam that contains it. Joining us now is Sydney Morning Herald investigative journalist Carrie Fellner, whose work in Australia around PFAS is at the centre of this documentary. Kia ora, Carrie.
How are you?
So great, thank you. So lovely to have you here. First of all, can you just explain a little bit better than I have what are or is PFAS? PFAS?
Yeah, well, some of your listeners might not have actually heard of this type of chemical because it's really only kind of burst onto the scene in the last decade or so, coming into public consciousness, but they've actually been used since the 1930s. And the reason that they're known as forever chemicals, or that the technical name is PFAS, is because these chemicals are basically one of the strongest known compounds to humankind. They're incredibly difficult to break down. So once they're in the environment, they stay there pretty much forever. And once they're in the human body, they stay there for years. So these chemicals were discovered by a multinational corporation called 3M Company, which is based in the United States. And it was just like a miracle product for them because it had this huge array of uses. It could be used in things like Teflon frying pans. So they sold the ingredients to DuPont to use in their nonstick frying pans. It could be used in fabric protectors like Scotchgard. It could be used in firefighting foam. And all sorts of things over the last sort of 20 years, about 14,000 different types of forever chemicals have been developed. It's extraordinary the extent to which they're used. And what we have seen over the last 10 years or so is increasing concern from scientists about what these chemicals actually do to the human body. And because there's 14,000 of them, only a very small handful have been studied. And one of the most common ones was declared carcinogenic in December by the World Health Organization. And we're also seeing them linked not only to cancer, but to things like immune suppression, high cholesterol, and disruption of hormones.
What strikes me the most is that documents show the people making and using these chemicals have known for decades just how dangerous they can be, and yet they're still continually used. They're used today. How have we got here?
Yeah, so I started looking at this as the first sort of lawsuits against the manufacturers were happening, which has happened between about 2018 and just earlier this year we saw the first one settled in the United States. And so I joined up with a documentary team led by director Katrina McGowan, and we made contact with these lawyers and started looking into what was coming out through these lawsuits. Mm. And what we discovered were these extraordinary files of 3M's that 3M was forced to turn over to the court. And what those actually showed was that 3M knew as far back as 1975 that these chemicals were getting into the blood of people all over the world, you know, from the States to Australia to New Zealand to, you know, they were going out and testing people in rural China, and they were finding even people in rural China were contaminated. I mean, we're talking about 98% of the world's population.
Can you tell us a bit about the community that you focus on in the documentary and how PFAS has affected them there?
Yeah, so in the documentary, we visit a small Aboriginal community of about 400 people on the south coast of New South Wales in Australia. It's near a world-famous beach called Hyams Beach that's known for its beautiful white sands and turquoise waters. So this Aboriginal community were living a sort of idyllic existence, you know, where the kids would play in the creeks and spend all day on the beach. And then they found out just a few years ago that their waterways and food source and water supply had all been poisoned from forever chemicals that were used on the neighbouring Defence Force base. And it had been training with the firefighting foam, and the foam had run down the hill into that community. So it was just so disturbing to see their most sacred sites contaminated, the creeks that the youngsters played in that were like a nursery for the children with dangerous levels of forever chemicals in them. And what was sort of most shocking of all was to see how serious some of the health impacts are in that community. We saw some of the highest rates of premature loss of life in the whole of Australia. Like, while we were filming, six of those community members died in 5 months.
What happens here? I understand there's been several settlements with various communities that have been affected and individuals that have been affected, and between them and the companies behind PFAS. I mean, we've seen New Zealand ban PFAS in cosmetics from 2026, but are there regulations coming into play? Like, what's happening in Australia? How does this end is basically what I want to know. It's so terrible.
Yeah, it's the issue is so huge that I think it's going to take a long time for governments around the world to really understand the extent of it and to get on top of it. Because a lot of the contaminated sites, or potentially contaminated sites across Australia and most likely New Zealand too, they haven't even started to test for the forever chemicals, let alone start to clean it up or inform the communities.
Wow, goodness gracious me. Carrie Fellner, Sydney Morning Herald investigative journalist, thank you for your time. And that Stan original documentary, Revealed, How to Poison a Planet, debuts across the ditch later this month. There's no word as to whether or not we'll get it here on our shores, but if you are obviously on Australia soon, definitely give it to watch.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're talking splurges later on in the show, that big purchase, the thing you're dropping some significant cash on. And I would love to know what you're splurging on, if you can splurge, of course. And that is sort of essentially why we're talking about splurges later on in the show as well. But is it food? Is it travel? Is it clothes? We'll put up a poll on the NZ Stuff Instagram. Get your votes in. And if you wanted to email your splurges in, maybe a picture of said splurge, especially if it's an animal. We all know how expensive and splurgy our pets can be. Our email address is newsable@stuff.co.nz. Officials are advising the government its military-style youth academies will not work if they are too tough. The government's plans to crack down on youth offending are beginning to edge closer, and in the next 3 months, it'll make decisions over setting up a serious youth offender category and making military youth academies a sentencing option for court. These academies are the ones often described as boot camps, which is not a term the government is keen on. A month ago, the Children's Minister revealed the first of the military academies would be operational by the middle of this year, but documents containing advice to the Children's Minister, Axe Karen Chua, reveal concerns from advisers and a recommendation towards a softer approach. Here to talk more on this is Jo Bowden, an Otago University social psychologist. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
These boot camps / youth military academies, they promise to have wraparound services to help the wider whānau along with the discipline, that military discipline. They do sound like they could work, right?
I suppose there's a kind of common sense argument that one of the things that young people need to learn is discipline in order to succeed in life. So it does make sense, I think, to people when they read about these things and think, oh, well, that probably is a solution to young people who are a loose end and who might be involved with the wrong people and getting up to the wrong things.
This model is constantly referred to as something that has been similar in the past here in New Zealand. Can you just remind us what these past similarities were and how this new iteration as such compares?
Previously, these boot camps were set up and young offenders could be sent to these where they would do a number, you know, military-style discipline sorts of things and other programs as well. there's several issues with them. One is that this particular approach is very resource intensive and expensive. And for such an expense, you would at least hope for a decent return on that investment. Unfortunately, I believe the figure from the earlier iteration of these camps that we had here in New Zealand had a recidivism rate of about 83%, I believe, which is quite large.
What are the differences then between what we used to have and what is being proposed right now? Do you see any differences? And do you have any concerns?
The trouble is, I'm not sure there's any practical difference between what's being proposed now and what was done previously. As I understand it, the program is meant to be longer. And there's some evidence to suggest that longer programs tend to be more effective. But having said that, over and over again, what the literature tells us on these boot camps is that they're not very effective at reducing youth offending at all.
What is your major concern then about these military-style youth camps?
Well, we've just got through or are getting through an inquiry into the abuse and care inquiry. And these sorts of programs and situations are exactly where these kinds of things occur, where young people are exploited or are abused in various ways. And the other thing is that essentially what the early research tended to report on these things and basically referred to these things as a training camp for young offenders, as in training them to become better offenders. Mm. As a social psychologist, one of the key things here is that if these young people are being treated harshly, well, that's essentially what they come to expect.
So the idea of setting up the serious youth offender category and then having the military academies as a sentencing option, the idea behind it is that it's a circuit breaker, right? You don't seem to think that that's going to happen. What do you think then is the solution to not solving, but I guess reducing that youth crime? Because we know small shop owners, small business owners are really scared. And we all saw and lived through those headlines of ram raids after ram raids.
When, in fact, if you look at the data for youth offending, over the years, it's been declining fairly steadily. So we know actually what to do about this, and the things that we're doing are working relatively well. Yes, there was a spike in youth offending after the pandemic, just like there was a spike in inequality and inflation and all of those sorts of things that happened after the pandemic. And we would have expected that to actually die down over time. The issue is that with youth offending, you actually have to be dealing with causes. And to deal with causes, you need to start earlier in life course.
Interesting stuff. Thank you very much for taking the time to chat with me just now. Otago University social psychologist Joe Bowden. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read From Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week, we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture, and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So, for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read From Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.
Former Black Fern Kendra Coxedge is about to join us ahead of this weekend's Super Rugby Opiki final. And hey, if you are enjoying what you're hearing, remember to chuck us a like and a follow wherever you get your podcasts. It is the final of the Super Rugby Opiki competition this weekend, with the Blues hosting Chiefs Manawa after the Chiefs were knocked off the top of the table. So what can we expect out of this weekend's match? To talk all things women's rugby, we're joined by former Black Fern and Sky commentator Kendra Coxedge for Newsable Sport, proudly brought to you by Sky, your sport unrivaled. Kendra, what sort of battle are you expecting this weekend?
Oh, I am excited. I think it's going to be a top quality match. I think the Opiki's been really exciting so far. I think both teams are going to be really wanting to put out a 80 minute plus performance. I don't think a team's put out like a full 80 minute performance yet. So I think it's all on. I think it's definitely all on now that it's in Auckland, Eden Park. Mm. So the Chiefs will have a bit of fight after they lost against Matatu last week, and Blues will be playing with a lot of confidence. So yeah, I think it's going to be a really exciting match, and everyone needs to tune on in.
Blues will also be playing with that home advantage, of course. Is that going to be the difference, do you reckon?
I think home advantage is massive. Obviously, you know, 2022 World Cup for us, having a home advantage in the sellout crowd at Eden Park is huge. And then I actually saw it again with Matatu playing the Chiefs on the weekend. And when the crowd can kind of get in behind you, you just lift that little bit extra. You know, you hear that support and everyone gets in behind you. So I think it definitely plays in the hands of the home team. But at the same time, the Chiefs are a quality side and know how to deal with that as well. And it's not too far, let's be honest, up the road from Hamilton and the Chiefs area to get up to Auckland. Mm. So I feel like it might be a bit of a split crowd. But you know, when you're playing at a ground that you know it, that you play it a lot and you know, I think that's also important as well.
And how good is this? The final's being broadcast on TikTok.
Yeah, broadcast on TikTok. I'm actually going to be part of that. I'm going to be broadcasting nice. On there with Portia Woodman and Michaela Blight. And we'll have a bit of fun throughout the day on TikTok. So you obviously tune in if you can't watch it on Sky Sport.
Love that. You're going to be doing a bit of a TikTok viral dance or anything?
Oh, I think, you know, I actually just had to download TikTok. Nah. I'm one of the old girls. I'll leave that to Portia and Minnie to do the TikTok dances with Joe Wheeler.
Love it. Hey, you mentioned crowns. What has the support been like from fans this season? Have we hung on as a nation onto that fervour from the World Cup?
I think it still needs to be better. Like, it's still there. I experienced the game here in the weekend at a smaller ground in Apurnaway with Matatu versus the Chiefs, and the crowd was epic. It was packed out. There was lots of things going on. There was food carts, and I think that's what's really cool. And I still call out our public, New Zealand public, to get in behind women's rugby and support it, because I just know what it was like during the World Cup. And it's better, but we can be way better. That's for sure. We need bums on seats.
And the finals also come round super quick, right? Obviously, it's not a very long season. Have you got any thoughts on the structure of the competition? Is it working? What more needs to be done?
I think at the moment, like, it's been put in, it's happened really quickly, and we had to kind of bridge that gap between the Whārapama Cup and Black Ferns by having Aupiki, and it's lifted that extra standard, and it's doing what it's needed to do in terms of the competitive environment it's creating for players and getting people to perform at that next level around, you know, quality players. Like, we look at the example of the Blues and the Chiefs this weekend, and got Black Ferns and Star Sutton, and as well as new upcoming excited players as well. So I think future, obviously, we always know we can look at doing things better, and things can change, and I think that will. But right now, it's doing what is required. But we need to continue, as I said, get the support around it, get people along, because it's exciting for more old footy. And then hopefully we'll see it grow in the years to come.
Oh, what an exciting weekend this weekend will be. Former Black Fern and Sky commentator Kendra Coxedge for Newsable Sport, proudly brought to you by Sky, your sport unrivaled. Thank you for joining us. And you can watch the Super Rugby Aupiki final live for free on Sky Sport TikTok, like we mentioned, from 4 p.m. Saturday. No word yet on the dancers. We'll see what happens. The match will also be available on Sky Sport One, and you can stream it on Sky Sport Now and free to air as well on Sky Open. Plenty of ways to watch it. No excuses, anybody. And the Phoenix have that big match against the Melbourne Victory tonight in Wellington at Sky Stadium 2. And also, goodness me, I've got more to tell you. It's a big weekend for MMA followers, with UFC 300 available on pay-per-view from Sky Arena and Sky Sport from 2 p.m. Sunday. Plenty to get around. When you think splurge, what are you thinking of? Like clothes, travel, maybe like a fancy dinner, kitchen appliance, love, like a Smeg toaster. Well, forget all of those, because according to a survey from McKinsey and Company, a global strategy and management consulting firm, the hottest new splurge ticket is supermarket shopping. 4,000 people in the US were surveyed across a wide age range, and they were asked about the things they intended to splurge on in the year 2024. There were categories like restaurants, travel, beauty, fitness. And the American Gen Zers and millennials who took part said groceries. Groceries are now a splurge. What a sign of the cost of living times, am I right? There is, though, a wee asterisk in there, which said the Gen Z crowd often like to choose the bougie snacks and drinks, you know, as they shop the aisles. They're buying heaps of the latest health food trend, for example, which then naturally pump up that bill at the till. In case you were wondering, vehicles, fitness and household essentials were all bottom of the pack when it came to splurging across the entire survey. Not bothered with those, apparently. And going to either a restaurant or bar came in second place to the supermarket as a splurge. I would say my biggest splurge is the supermarket. because I love food. That's Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells. Have a wonderful weekend and make sure you catch some of all that sport so that I didn't tell you for nothing.
If you like this podcast, please support our work. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Hey, Chris.
Yes.
Do you want another very broad question? I've got a very broad question today.
Go on then.
What do you know about sports?
Up the Wars! Go the Black Caps. And don't forget Premier League football.
Oh, you do love a bit of Premier League footy, don't you? What team is it that you support again?
Oh, the current champions, Manchester City.
I think they're pronounced Arsenal. It's pronounced Arsenal.
But you know what's good about football?
Yeah, what?
They don't regulate soccer.
I'm sorry? There's a sport that regulates soccer?
Indeed there is, and it's cycling.
That's very strange. Why on earth do they regulate it?
Well, I know, but if you want to find out, you'll have to listen to the Big Stuff Quiz, wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, that's a cliffhanger indeed. The Big Stuff Quiz is brought to you by Melbourne, Every Bit Different.